Excellent. Should I put my phone to hold your phone and then you won't deal with this phone?
Good idea. Excellent. Very innovative people here. Excellent. Okay. If you see the phone buzzing that people want to get in, then just remind me. So I want to start this is a very interesting horror that I thought of recently. The Gemara in Chagiga, Babli in Chagiga, says the following. That the Torah that we have was really formulated way before the actual giving of the Torah, and it had basically the giving of the Torah it was delayed for a very, very long period of time. Tough kuf ayin dalet doros. At 974 generations, the Torah was created before it was given. How do we know this? Because the pasuk in Tehillim says, "Davar tziva le'elef dor," the thing that was commanded for 1,000 generations, in the 1,000th generation. Okay, so if you take how many generations from Adam till Moshe, so we have the 10 generations from Adam to Noach, another 10 from Noach to Avraham, and then Avraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov, Levi, Kahas, Amram, Moshe, right? So that's 6, right? Not including Avram, meaning Avram is the 10th of the last set of 10, yeah? So you have another 6, yeah? So that's 26 generations. So if the Torah was Tziva Le'elef Dor, that means there is 974 generations that preceded it. So there was this, the Torah was, it went through this process, Ki'ilu, of being refined, perhaps, right? There's a Midrash Rabbah in Bamidbar that talks about, no, excuse me, in Devarim, that talks about the need for, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was chozer on the Torah before he gave it. So too, you have to be chozer on the Torah before you give it, which is where we learn the halacha. Shalom Aleichem, please join. We learn this halacha lamaisa, that a Bal Korei, before he reads the Torah in public, he needs to go over it, so that he'll be able to give it over well, and also someone's going to give a shir should review the Torah the Torah learning before he gives it over, because God also reviewed. The idea being that the review isn't just so that you'll make sure that you remember it correctly. The reviewing is also formulating it in a way that it can be delivered to someone else. You might know it perfectly, but formulating it in a way that you can tell it to someone else is a completely different category of things. So there is this process which is symbolized by these 974 Doros generations that preceded the count of generations that are given in the Torah, and the Torah was eventually given in the 1,000th generation.
And those generations of 974 generations were referring to before the world was created.
Before Adam. Before Adam. Let's say before the world was created. Let's just stick with before Adam.
So it's within when the world was created, but it's Lav Dafka. I mean, it could either be within when the world was created, but not before Adam.
Listen, the Vayikra Rabbah says that the Seder Hadoros that we have start from Vayifach Ba'apav Nishmas Chaim, the Pasuk Vayifach Ba'apav Nishmas Chaim, and before that we don't have a timeline. That's what the Midrash Rabbah says. Meaning the 5,700 whatever years that we have that we're up to Kavayachol is starting from that pasuk, and before that we don't know. And it's an interesting sugya. It's actually nogeya to this year with Shemitah, because the Rambam talks about this in the 10th parak of Shemitah V'Yovel, about how the counting of the world, the counting of from Isaac Bereshis, Kavayachol starts on the 25th of Elul. Why is that? Because 6 days, the 6 days of creation started the 25th of Elul. Right. So it says Kavayachol, it's starting from then. So it's an interesting thing to discuss how we relate to that process, where the Rambam himself holds in Moreh Nevuchim that the process of creation was not 6 literal days. So it's just interesting to observe that. We're getting a joiner. No, I want to stay. Okay. So all this is a bit tangential, as we'll see in a moment, because this is really not the point of what I was trying to say. The point is that the Gemara says that this pasuk, of Davar Tziva Le'elav Dor is referring to the Torah, the giving of the Torah. And the Torah was formulated 900 whatever years, or generations rather, before Adam HaRishon, and plus the 26 generations afterwards, so we come up to 1,000. Now, what is this Pasuk? Where is this Pasuk? Pasuk is from Tehillim Kufei, which we should be at least generally familiar with. All right, because we say many parts of it in Sukkot Zimra, at least the beginning part, not the Davar Tziva Le'elav Dor part, because that comes later, after, right? Correct. So the context of this pasuk is that this parak of Tehillim gives literally from pasuk Tes all the way to the end a synopsis of the all Jewish history from Avram Avinu until the Knesset La'aretz. Okay, and it starts off in pasuk ches. Zachar li'olam briso davar tziva le'elav dor. God remembers His bris, that which He commanded for 1,000 generations. Which again, according to the Gemara Chagiga, talking about the Torah, it's talking about the giving of the Torah. Now, is this pasuk actually talking about the giving of the Torah? On the pshat level, he's absolutely not talking about it. Let's see. Asher karasas Avram. This is pasuk tes. Okay, that which, meaning the bris, which He commanded for 1,000 generations, that he concretized with Avram, ushvasol Yitzchak, and then swore to his son Yitzchak, vaymidel Yaakov, and then he founded it also for Yaakov. Okay, bris olam, a permanent covenant. Pasuk yud aleph lemor. What does the bris say? Look explicitly. What does the bris say? Lecha etein es eres Kenan chevel nachal aschem. To you I will give Eretz Yisrael, and that will be your eternal portion and your eternal heritage. So this pasuk has nothing to do with Matan Torah. It's talking about Eretz Yisrael. They were wandering nomads, because Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov were wandering, right? As we know, we discussed this idea several times, different contexts, that the Avos were wandering. They had no permanence, right? The whole Lech Lecha idea is that Avram is told that you're not going to have any permanence. That was the whole Nisayon, to accept the life as a ger. As Avram says, "Ger v'toshav anochi imachem." Lo yiniach la'adam nashkam, and even then, when they were these wandering, nomadic tribes, God didn't let anyone harm them. By yochach le'em alachim, al tigubim shichai. Do not touch my anointed one. Uvdiyai al tareyu, and do not do evil to my prophets. And from pasuk tes Zion, it continues with this historical overview and goes into more detail. Ikra rav al aretz komat alechem shavar. The famine that occurred in the time of Yaakov and Yosef, when Yosef is ruling Egypt, Shalach Nehem Ish, Le'ev Nimkar Yosef, etc., etc. And he gives the whole rundown through the slavery in Egypt, through Yetzias Mitzrayim. It even counts the plagues. It even counts like which plagues. It gives a slightly different order of the Malkos as they appear in the Torah. But whatever, gives a lot of detail. They got them out of Mitzrayim, Holchu Batzios Nahar, and God provided them miraculously in the desert, etc., etc. So we see that this pasuk is clearly not talking about the Torah. So how can the Gemara say that this pasuk, okay, is describing the creation or the formulation of the Torah prior to Adam HaRishon, many, many generations that require this process in order to enter the world in the form in which we know. So I want to explore different options on this over here. Okay. So, let's start with the psukim. That's a good place to start. So, this is going to be like a segue of sorts from the end of Perek Ches in Devarim all the way through Perek Yud Aleph. Don't worry, we're not going to read the whole thing. Just a few excerpts. Okay. So this is going. We see in Parshas Ekev that this is the parsha that really starts to introduce the importance of Eretz Yisrael in the context of the whole program that Moshe Rabbeinu is giving over to the Jewish people. God is bringing you to a good land, Eretz Nachlei Mayim, with natural water that are going flowing through all the valleys and the mountains. Eretz Chitosa, Rav Gefen Utenav Rimon, Eretz Zeis Shemen Udavash, the seven species that Eretz Yisrael is praised with. It's plentiful and it's not going to be scarce. Ve'achalta v'savata, and when you enter this land, you're going to be satiated from all this goodness that I'm describing. And you will bless God on this great land that I have given you, which is, in fact, a mitzvah saseh. What's the mitzvah saseh? Because I'm Muslim. Because I'm Muslim is a mitzvah saseh based on the Torah. Meaning, Moshe is saying you're going to enter the land. It's a great land. There's a lot going on in this land. Really good stuff. And you're going to be satiated from all this goodness. And when you're satiated, you're going to bless God for all this goodness. That's the bracha of Berkas HaMazon. Which is why, by the way, the idea, and I say this somewhat parenthetically, the notion that Berkas HaMazon is a generic blessing that was instituted by the Torah or by Chazal or whatever for a meal, like a big main staple meal that a person eats, regardless of what it is. Okay, it could be steak, it could be whatever. Back in the day, it was bread. Okay, fine. So that's what they did back then. But now, bread isn't such a chashuv food, and steak is the chashuv food. So you should make the Berkas HaMazon on steak. Okay, what? It can't be that. I'm glad that you never heard of this, but this is actually an opinion that is given forward with some level of seriousness. Now, the reason that this can't possibly be is because Berkas HaMazon explicitly has nothing to do with a chashuv meal, not chashuv meal. Obviously, there are halachic context in which we relate to achilas kva as opposed to achilas keva, right? Important eating as opposed to non-important eating. There are different definitions of the types of eating. But for purposes of Berkas HaMazon, what is Berkas HaMazon? It's a bracha on the aretz. That's the bracha. Uberach shem lekecha al haaretz hatova shenasan lach, on the good land that you got. So that's the bracha, to on the land, meaning on the species that I just mentioned, the last pasuk, the things that grow from the land. So it can't be on anything else other than these species. There's a whole discussion in the Rishonim if bracha me'ein shalosh, meaning ala micha and ala eitz, is d'oraisa. The Sheiltos, by the way, holds that me'ein shalosh is included in this mitzvah. Ala micha and ala eitz is included in this mitzvah. Just to throw that out there.
One of the Sheiltos in brachos was that you have to bench on those on the Sheiltos.
Correct. So we say that it's me'ein shalosh. It's me'ein shalosh. That it's like a condensed version of the benching, but just to throw that out there. Okay, so we're skipping forward a little bit to the end of Parshas Ekev. This is the segue. The whole Perek Yud Aleph is kind of a run on from the end of Ekev into the beginning of Re'eh. So pasuk ches, ushmartim es kol hamitzvah asher anochi mitzavach hayom. You should keep this mitzvah that I am giving you today. Leman techesku, that you should be strong. Uvasim rishim es haaretz, so that you could be strong and conquer the land. Uleman tarichu yomim al adama, and that your days will be lengthened on this earth. Asher nishba Hashem labaseichem, that I have the earth that I have sworn to your fathers, i.e. Eretz Yisrael, Eretz zavas chalav udvash. Look at Mitzrayim here. It's not like the land of Egypt, this land. Asher yosasam misham. Asher tisra zaracha vishisa braglecha kigan hayarak. That the water sources aren't from rain. The water source is from the Nile. The Nile overflows seasonally, and from that, it irrigates everything around it. It's a very, very rich water source because the silt that sits on the bottom of the Nile is extremely mineral rich. So not only do you get water, but you get all the nutrients that are sitting at the bottom of the Nile that feeds the crops. So it's not like that. You can't rely on the Nile. Rather, as Hashem Elokech Doresh, it's a tamid and Hashem Elokech Abba. Rather, it is in a constant state of hashgacha from Hakadosh Baruch Hu. Constant state of hashgacha, meaning the state of the land is very much determined by how you relate to God. Vayam shamar tishmuel el mitzvosai, and if you listen to my commandments, then there will be a reciprocal effect on the land itself. This is the whole second parsha of Kriyat Shema that we're all very familiar with. This is the context of that whole parsha, that second parsha of Kriyat Shema. It's like you're going into the land that is going to respond to how you act. Okay, so if you act in the way that I'm telling you to act, then the land is going to reflect that behavior. Kim Shamor Tishmurun, I'm skipping forward to Pasuk Chaf Beis. Kim Shamor Tishmurun is called Mitzvah Hazos Hashem Anochim Mitzavach Eschem Nasasa. If you keep this commandment that I am telling you today, V'horish Hashem Eskol Agoyim Ha'il Mifneichem V'rishtem, and you will conquer the land. Again, this is all in the context of Yerusha Sa'aretz. This entire conversation is Yerusha Sa'aretz. The second parasha of Kriyashma that we refer to as the second parasha of Kriyashma is that which taken alone seems to be very generic about keeping the mitzvos and the punishment for not keeping the mitzvos, is within the context of Yerusha Aris. It's going from the river in the north, the Euphrates, all the way to the Mediterranean in the west. And no man will stand before you. And God will put the fear and dread of you upon the entire land. And that is the end of the Sidra of Re'eh. That's not the end of Perikud Aleph. It's the end of Sidra of Re'eh. Going straight into Re'eh. Okay? Re'eh anochi nosen lifnechem hayom, bracha oklala. And I'm putting before you this blessing and this curse. As a bracha asher tishmu, the bracha that will be if you do follow everything that I just iterated in the psukim at the end of Parshas Ekev. V'akvala im lo tishmu, and the klala is going to be if you don't listen. V'hayaki v'yacha Hashem el ha'aretz, when you get to this land, again, the land, because that's the topic of the conversation right now, when you get to this land, v'nosasa sabracha, this blessing and this curse, you will put these blessings and curse, al har grizim v'al har eval, you will put these blessings on these mountains. It sounds a little strange. What do you mean? The blessings are on the mountain. The blessing is on a mountain. The curse is on a mountain. Like, why do they need to be on a mountain? There's a specific mountain. Like, they just exist, right? They just exist. Like, God will bring you the blessing if you deserve the blessing. He'll bring you the curse if you bring the curse. Why do they have to be on a mountain? Halohema be'ever ha'yordain. They're on the other side of the Jordan, meaning the western side of the Jordan. Telling exactly where they are, so you won't be confused. Har Eval and Har Grizim, they're slightly north from here. Ushmartim la'asos eskol ha'chukim v'ez ha'mishpatim asher anochi nosen lifnechem hayom. Great. Now, one last ha'ara from the beginning of Perek Yud-Bez. Okay, and this is where we're going to end, with the psukim part. But this part you have to listen carefully, because it's a bit of a diuk time. I think we might have brought this up in other chaburas, but this is very interesting to notice. Eila chukim v'hamishpatim asher tishmun la'asos. These are the chukim and the mishpatim that you will keep. So until this point, Moshe is laying out the parameters for which the bris is going to take place. God is giving you a Torah to keep, and you got to make sure that you keep it. And the land is going to reflect whether or not you keep this bris. It's going to be a reflection of that. It's going to be rain, it's not going to be rain, it's going to be a blessing, it's going to be a curse. And the curses and the blessings are on the mountains of the land. They're embodied in the mountains of the actual land. You know, the bracha is on Har Grizim, and the klala is on Har Ebal. Now he's going into detail, he's going to start to list what the actual chukim and mishpatim are. These are them. He's going to go into detail what the actual mitzvahs are. First of all, you have to get rid of all the idolatry in the land. You have to break all their altars, and all their pillars, all their statues, and their ritual trees you have to burn. And lo ta'asukein la'Hashem elokeichem. Don't do this to Hashem your God. What's this that it's telling you not to do?
Break all the idols.
So that's a drasha. That's what Chazal say in the drasha. We actually learn a mitzvah, right, a lotase from that. Lotasun Kain, the drasha of Lotasun Kain, is to not erase God's name. Right. Or to destroy anything, as the Rambam says, to destroy anything that's been given over to God's name. Well, as we're going to see in a moment, in the very next pasuk, it's clearly not the pshat. It is a drasha, and it is actually a mitzvah sase, or a lotase rather, but it's not the pshat. Lotasun Kain Hashem Elokechem, ki im, rather, El hamakom asher yivchar Hashem Elokeichem mikol shivteichem lasum es shemosham. You see what it did? You see what the pasuk is focusing on? You thought you were just being given a list of all the things that you're supposed to destroy. That's true. But in addition to that, what is it saying? It's saying, you see how these Ovdei Avodah Zarah, they operate? They put an altar on every mountain. They put a statue on every hilltop. They plant a tree wherever they want. They're worshiping their gods wherever they want. Lo ta'asun kein la'Hashem Elokeichem. You will not do that for me. For me, you will not do that. Rather, ki im el hamakom asher yivchar Hashem Elokeichem mikol shivteichem lishichnos sidrashu vasa shama. You're going to go there. There's only one address. There's only one location. So you see how this is clearly not, right? The lo sase of Chazal is not the pshat of the psukim. It's a drasha. Now, right, is in fact the lo sase. But right, but it's a drasha, yeah? And you're going to bring there all of your karbanos, and you're going to eat before Hashem your God. Don't do what we're doing here today, here in the Midbar. Ish kol hayasar be'enav, that everyone does whatever they want. Everyone, right? Literally, what is good in their eyes. So let's see Rashi. Lo tasim kechol asher anachnu osim, says Rashi. Musav lamala. It is referring to what was mentioned above. Al ki atem ovrim es hayarden. You are entering. You are crossing the Jordan and entering the land. Keshatavru es hayarden. When you cross the Jordan, miyad mutarim atem lahakriv babama. You are able to bring sacrifices on a private altar. You're allowed to do that. Why? Because the land hasn't been conquered and there's no Beis Hamikdash. Kol yudalid shana shel kibush v'chiluk babama. The whole 14 years of the conquering and the divvying out of the land, they were allowed to bring karbonos on Obama. V'hu kashal akriv b'chatos v'ashamos nedarim minadavos, and all types of karbonos are able to be brought on this bama. V'zeu ish kol hayasher be'enav, and that's what it means when the pasuk says anyone can do what is good in their eyes.
Weren't all those not able to be brought on Obama?
It says anything. There's a discussion in the Gemara, in the Gemara in Zvachim. There's very long sugyas discussing what can be brought on Obama's yachid, what can be brought on Obama's tzibor. There's distinctions with these things. None of these things are relevant anymore, obviously. But there are sugyas technically about this, and the Gemara and the Rambam actually discusses some of them in Hilchos Beis HaBechira. But according to what Rashi is saying over here, like basically anything can be brought on Obama's yachid. That which is good in your eyes to bring. So here he's alluding to, I think, what you just said, that it's what is yashar be, only the karbonos that are yashar be'enecha, meaning those that are voluntary karbonos. Voluntary karbonos. I mean, non-voluntary karbonos, the right karbonos.
In the Pasuk, in the Torah, it says it's all you can bring.
It seems to list all the carbonos over here. Anyway, it's not the topic of the conversation, but there are distinctions. You're right. There are distinctions types of carbonos that you can bring in a yachid or in a bamas yachid or bamas tibor. Anyway, the point is that this ish kol hayashar be'ena, what is it referring to? It's referring to the ability to bring carbonos wherever you want, like the Ovdei Avodah Zarah do. That they worship their gods wherever they want, wherever they want to set up shop. They build a mizbeach, they build a matzeva, they plant an asherah. They set up a pop up Beis HaMikdash wherever they want. What is this ish kol hayashar be'enav referring to? I didn't want to bother you with the getting this out, so I just wrote them down so we can all just quote them. This phrase, he's called Yashar Be'enav, appears three times in Sefer Shoftim.
Yeah. By Pilagish Begiva, I think it comes up.
Right. So we're, yes,
by,
it does.
It comes up by story.
And most of them are in the context of Pilagish Begiva, and there's once in the context of Pesel Micha. Yeah. So we're gonna list them, okay? So listen, this is okay. First is Shoftim Yudzayin. The Ha'ish Micha Lo Beis Elohim. Okay, this chabura is unique because we have to, you know, keep the flow. We have to jump from topic to topic without losing the flow. Okay, I know that we've already mentioned a lot, but I promise you, it's all going to come together. Shoftim Yudzayin. The Ha'ish Micha Lo Beis Elohim Bayase Fodu Shofim. There's this guy named Micha, and he decided he was going to build his own private pagan hotspot. Vayimalei es yad echad mibanav vayilo lechoen. And he made him a Kohen. Bayamim ahem ein melech b'Yisrael ish hayashar be'enav yaseh. Anyone does whatever they want. That's the first instance. Second instance is the parak right after that, which is also part of the same narrative. Bayamim ahem ein melech b'Yisrael ubayamim ahem shevet hadani mevakesh lo nachal al sheves ki lo naflo lo ad hahu besoch shivtei Yisrael barachala. This was a problem with the Danites that they couldn't get. They couldn't organize themselves. They couldn't get. They also couldn't get any help from the other Shvatim to conquer their territory, which was meant to be in the north, and it didn't end up being in the north. They had to go south to like the Eshtaol area, which is why we call the area today, Gush Dan, because that's where the Danites ended up settling in that area.
Like in Merkaz?
Like in the Merkaz, exactly. And who's from there? What famous Danite is from there? Later on in the Sefer. Well, earlier in the Sefer, actually. Shimshon, right? Yeah, right. By Yamim Ha'em, Hechel Ruach Hashem Lefa'amo B'machane Dan Bein Saro Bein Ishtal. That's because that's where he's from. And that's why he has this kesher with the Philistines. Yeah, because he's right there, where the Philistines are.
Right south of the Merkaz.
Yeah. Okay, and then the last instance is the very, very end. In fact, this is the last pasuk in Sefer Shoftim. The very last line in Sefer Shoftim, after, as you said, in this massive civil war that takes place, it's not the only civil war, it's the first one, the first civil war that takes place in the Jewish people between Binyamin and the rest of Klal Yisrael, this massive war, tens of thousands of people die, it's really horrible, and it ends off with this unspeakable tragedy. It just ends off with "Bayamim ha'em ein melech b'Yisrael ish hayashar be'enav yaseh." There's no melech, and anyone does whatever they want. So these three psukim, again, I don't want to hone in too much on this point, but these three psukim really break down what the problem is of a lack of a melech. There's basically three categories. Category number one, okay, we'll start from the Danites. When there's no organized national defense about how you wage wars and stuff, because there's problems all over the place. People suffer from different problems. So, like, for example, 2 years ago when we had the countrywide riots that were affecting Arab and Jewish cities in the country. So we had the things in Ramla and things in Lod and things in East Jerusalem. And so no one in this country, thank God, because we don't think this way anymore. We required 19 centuries of Gullus in order to inculcate this awareness. But no one would suggest for a moment that the that what was going on in Lod was a problem with the people that live in Lod. It was their problem, right? The people in Lod are having a problem. No, and no one's going to say that the people in East Jerusalem are having a problem. No one thinks like that. We have a problem. Everyone has a problem. The guys in Kiryat Shmona have a problem. The guys in Eilat have a problem. The guys in Nachlaot have a problem. Everyone's got a problem. There's a real problem, and we all have to deal with this problem. But back then, they didn't look at it that way. If Dan has an issue conquering their territory in the north, okay, so it's their problem. They should get their act together and work it out. Yeah? It leads to very serious problems. Because when you have one group that's ostensibly, right, at least in spirit, supposed to be part of a bigger group, and no one from the bigger group is helping them out, then you're in trouble. It leads to all these issues. And this is just the story of the whole Pesel Micha and the whole, the traveling band of pagans. We've discussed this story at length in different occasions. But this was an outgrowth of that. Okay, that's the first problem.
So the same thing with Devorah. Devorah was also in her shira, but she's giving a lot of musar.
Correct. Nachon.
The only two shvatim came to help.
Nachon.
Nachon. Devorah, right? It was just Naftali and Zvulun, I think.
Naftali and Zvulun, yeah.
And everyone else just sit on the side, and she's like giving that harsh musar. Like,
Nachon.
Where is Klal Yisrael?
You know, there, you could say, is slightly different. I mean, maybe slightly worse in a way, because Sisera was so violent and so powerful. The idea of the southern tribes was that we don't want to get involved. Like, we get involved, we're going to be in trouble. Right. It's not so much not our problem, it's that we actually don't want to be destroyed like the northern tribes are being destroyed. Anyway,
Correct, for sure.
The other problem, as we said a second ago, is the civil war thing. The Shvatim start this war over this horrible Pilegesh Begiva incident, which is just terrible. And anyone who knows just a little bit of the language that's used over there compared to the language that's used in which story in Sefer Bereishis? Sodom. Sodom. It's a clear parallel, one-to-one parallel. You don't even need to know. Like, it's not like a Reformin Diuk thing. It's just very, very clear. It's very clear. Like, the language is being used in the story of Lot and Sodom is the language that's being used there. To tell you, it's just abject corruption. No one, less din, less dayan. No one's running the show. It's just complete bedlam. Okay? That's the second problem. Third problem is the problem that's relevant to our conversation right now, which is what? Which is the story of the Pesel B'Micha thing. That Micha has this, he sets up a pagan house of worship in his backyard. He sets up his own priestly class. Everyone does whatever they want. The idea being that the structure of Malchus Yisrael is meant to produce a situation in which there is a unified Avodas Hashem in Eretz Yisrael. And this is a direct allusion, the first time that we see this Ish Kol HaYashar Be'enav, is in this parsha. This parsha. Don't do what the Goyim did, that they're all sporadic and doing their own thing. That's not what you're supposed to do. You go to one place. All of you go to one place for Avodas Hashem. And who's supposed to be the one that's orchestrating it? The Malchus is meant to orchestrate that. That's why you have a Malchus. You have a Malchus in order to orchestrate this unity in the context of Avodas Hashem. So Moshe Rabbeinu is saying, Yishkol Yash Rabbeinu, don't, now Yishkol Yash Rabbeinu, because we're in limbo, we're fighting the war, we're divvying up the land, we can't be too organized because this is just a situation. But when you finally do conquer the land, make sure that you're not doing what the Goyim are doing. Make sure that you all go to one place. And the Melech is supposed to facilitate that. Perush, Malchus Yisrael and Eretz Yisrael is meant to create the context in which Avodas Hashem is carried out in the unified sense of Klal Yisrael. That is the point. That is the point. And all of Sefer Shoftim, one can argue that all of Sefer Shoftim is to highlight all of the dysfunctions that take place when this is not done correctly. Yeah? Got it? Do you mind pouring me in?
Yeah.
Thank you. I have it. Yeah, I forgot about that. This is why I brought it.
Yes, that's probably shot, like why Yerov and Nevat might have been like the worst man. Like Ravamo says he's like the worst like character in history. It could be because what did he do that was so bad? Like, he blocked the roads to go into the base of Mikdash as a melech. Used the melech to be mekalkel the whole
thing.
Meaning the whole job of the melech is to be mekalkel.
Right, because Yerovam used, right, Yerovam was the opposite. He used his power of malchus not to bring the nation together, but to divide them.
That's
yes.
The whole purpose of the
to cut them, right, specifically to cut them off the base of Mikdash. Correct.
So the melech had correct. The greatest opportunity. Yep. That's the biggest failure you could possibly achieve.
Yes. Very good. Very good. Yeah, that's very good.
So eight melech be strong is also in.
So I want to read from Gemara in Sukkah in the first parak. Yeah, let's begin to wrap this up. I don't want to keep you guys there too long. Plus, it's very hot in this room. The Gemara. Huh?
Can we get water?
Yeah, you want to run and grab some? Yishar koch. The Gemara over here in Sukkah is quoting is dealing with the sugya. It is a very general sugya, obviously, the sugya of shiurim, of measurements, of halachic measurements. That there are certain measurements that come up that apply in many different areas of halacha. The most common one being a kazayas, obviously, that any time that you have to eat something, consume something, or you're not allowed to consume something, so that volume, that shiur, is a kazayas. So says the Gemara, the quotes of Brisa. Excuse me. First, Rabbi Hanina quotes the pasuk from Devarim that we quoted a second ago from the beginning of Sefer VaYikra. He says that all of the shiurim we learn from this pasuk. Which pasuk? The pasuk in Sefer Devarim. Eretz chitah usara v'gefen v'seinav rimon v'chulam l'shem shiurim. V'chulun l'shiurim ne'emar. That's what the lashon of Gemara. Chita l'bayis ha'menuga. Chita is talking about the halacha of tzaras, about how long a person needs to sit, the metzorah rather needs to sit in a house in order to contract, in order to impart rather, to impart tumah on the house. So ora ke'etzem, etzem kese'ora, that a bone that contracts tumah. That right, the shear from which it can impart tumah is a thing of seora. Zayas, obviously, as we just said, zayas is the shear of food, and it lists all the shearim that are learned ostensibly from these different types of fruits. So says the Gemara. Wait a second, is that true? Is that really true that we learn all these shearim from these fruits? Hare shearim chatzitzin umechitzos. These three areas, the shearim, the idea of a mechitza, any mechitza that creates a partition between different rishios. And chatzitza, things that separate one thing from another, typically in the context of tumah v'tahara, also like when a person goes into a mikvah, but also for, let's say, when the kohen goes into the beis hamikdash, his feet have to be making contact with the floor, and what's considered a separation between his feet and the floor, things like that. These three areas are all learned from a halacha Moshe Sinai. So says the Gemara, inachanami, you're right, elahil chasaninu, all of these things are in fact a halacha Moshe Sinai, meaning all the shiurim are a halacha l'Moshe Sinai. The kra asmachta ba'alma. And the Kra is, and, right, the Pasuk is only something that we lean on as an allusion to this halacha, but it's not the actual source of the halacha. Now, I want you to think about the significance of what is being said over here, okay? Halacha lemoshe misinai. Halacha lemoshe misinai. Meaning, the Jewish people received this tradition in the Midbar, as the Rambam goes through great lengths in the Hakdamah to Perush HaMishnayos, explaining, this is also based on the Gemara in Erevin, about how the Torah was transmitted through the entire 40 years of the Midbar. That Moshe would give regular shiurim, and there would be an order to this. First he would tell Aaron and his sons, and then the Zakenim, and then all of Klal Yisrael, which means that Aaron heard it, you know, four times, and his sons heard it a different amount of times, and all of Klal Yisrael heard it a different number of times. Anyway, the point is that there was a Seder, the entire Midbar experience, the Jewish people were regularly receiving the Torah from Moshe. And one of the Torahs that there was, not just one, but, you know, a primary area of Torah about the shiurim, the volumes, the measurements, were being delivered for four decades in the Midbar. And now, as they're standing on the border of Eretz Yisrael, at the very end of the story, 40 years later, they're hearing this pasuk from Moshe. You're going into this land, and guess what grows in this land? Chita, Seora, Gethen, Teina, Rimon. They've been hearing about these fruits for the past 40 years they've been hearing about these things. They've been hearing about these fruits in all of Moshe's Shiurim for 40 years. And Moshe's saying, the land that you're going into, it grows all of these fruits. All of these fruits. This is, what does this mean? Perush Rabosa, listen to this. Eretz Yisrael is the land of the Shiurim. It's the Eretz Chita Seora, etc. It's the land in which the Shiurim are. Perush, Eretz Yisrael is the context in which the Torah is kept, Bishlei Musa. That's what it means. And that is, the whole message that's being delivered from the beginning of Parshas Ekev until the beginning of Parshas Re'eh, like we've seen. The entire Kiyum HaTorah is carried out in a certain context. It's carried out in the context, and that context is Eretz Yisrael. That's the context. And that context needs to be built. It needs to be created. And don't do like what we're doing today, Ish Kol Yashar Be'enav, it's all sporadic, everyone's doing their own thing, you're all just individuals going about your own business. No, you have to go into the Aretz and build a context in which the Torah is kept. That's what you want to do. Don't be like the chaos in Sefer Shoftim, Ein Melech B'Yisrael, Ish Kol Yashar Be'enav, everyone's doing their own thing. No, you have to build a structure, you have to build a context. That's what Eretz Yisrael is. Eretz Yisrael is the structure in which the Torah is able to be kept and able to be expressed fully. We started off with the question, Rabosai, from this pasuk in Tehillim. The Gemara Chagiga seems to say this pasuk, Dover Sivil El Dor, is talking about the Torah. And clearly, as we saw, explicitly, black on white, it's not talking about the Torah, it's talking about Eretz Yisrael. Let's skip all the way to the end of the parak, Rabosai. Again, goes through the whole history, from the Avos, through Mitzrayim, through Yetzias Mitzrayim. So I'm just reading from the last couple of psukim. So Mach Mitzrayim b'seisam, when they finally went out after all the plagues, Mitzrayim was so relieved, because their fear had befallen them. Parasan on the masach, and while they were in the midbar, they had the clouds covering them, the Ishlayer Laila, and the pillar of fire was illuminating the night. Sha'al v'yavei salav, and God fed them the slav, v'lechem shamayim yasbi'eim, and bread from the heavens. Pasach sor v'yazivu mayim, and he gave them water that flew out of a rock. Why? Ki zochar es dvar kodesho es Avraham avdo. He remembered the word that he had told Avraham, meaning asher karas es Avraham, this bris that we talked about in the beginning of this conversation, because he remembered that bris that he had told Avraham. Vayotzi amo besasan brinos bichirav, and he took them out. He took out his chosen ones with great joy. Vayitain lehem arzos goyim, and he gave them the land of the nations. Ba'avur, in order, Yishmeru Chukav, V'sorosov Yinsaru, so that they should be able to keep the Chukim and the Toros the way that they're supposed to be kept. That is the bris. I want you to understand what's being said over here, Rabosai. This is many, many psukim. This is, let's just give a quick count. The whole story over here starts from, let's do the most conservative count, right? It starts from Pasuk Tesvav. That's when we're introduced to this idea of the covenant that's given in the 1,000th generation, and it ends in Pasuk Memhei. This is, you know, a whole parak, basically, a long parak, talking about the specificities of Jewish history. Avraham was a wanderer, and his kids were wanderers, and they ended up in Mitzrayim, and they were repressed, and God performed all these crazy miracles for them in Mitzrayim, out of Mitzrayim, in the desert, bringing them into the land miraculously. This is the bris. This isn't the tangent. This is the bris. This is the bris. The bris is the context of Jewish history, and coming into the land is the bris. When we say that the Torah, it's not just a book of information, of things, right, of truth assertions or laws that you have to keep. It's not just that. The Torah is the context of Klal Yisrael, the narrative arc of the Jewish people, and building a framework in a place in which that can be kept. That's the bris. That's the bris. So when the Gemara in Chagiga says that the Torah, that this referred to the Torah, is absolutely right. This is the Torah. Not the Torah, the book. The Torah, the covenant of the Torah. That there is a story of a Jewish people, that they walk with God throughout all of history and through all types of miraculous situations, so that they can set up an Am that expresses that with the individuals, at the individual level, the communal level, and the national level. That is the Torah. That's the Torah. The Mishnah in Caleb, the very end of Perek Aleph in Caleb, Eser Kedushas Hay, there are 10 distinct levels of holiness that permeate the land of Israel. Eretz Yisrael Mekudeshes Mikol Haaretzos. So first of all, Eretz Yisrael is a whole. It is consecrated from all other lands. Umay Kedushasa, and what is its holiness? Shemeviyin Mimena HaOmer, that you can bring the carbon Omer, Bikurim, and the Shtei Alechem. None of the other lands you're allowed to bring these karbanos from. And the next Mishnayos delineate the other levels. There's the Aras Amukavos Choma. There's the cities that are surrounded by walls. Mikudash Vimena. That there's different laws governing them. Certain types of tumah can't remain inside of them. Lifnim Min Achoma, right within the walls of Yerushalayim. Har Habayis. Hachel, this is a takana from the time of Yehoshaphat HaMelech, that there is a chel, is an inner wall. There is a takana of, not Chazal, but earlier than Chazal, that Tmei Mason can't go past there. We have a rough idea of where the chel is. We certainly know areas where the chel is not. Exactly where the chel was completely destroyed, unfortunately. All right, the Ezras Nashim, which is even more inside there. Ezras Yisrael, which is even more inside, where the karbanos are brought. By the Mizbeach, and then obviously the Kodesh and the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Okay? Now, Rav Soloveitchik asks an unbelievable question on this Mishnah, in the very beginning of the Mishnah. Ezra Kedush was saying, there are ten levels of holiness that permeate Eretz Yisrael. Eretz Yisrael, as a whole, is level one Kedusha. And what is the Kedusha in it? Again, all the Kedushas that are listed, it says exactly what expresses their level of Kedusha. There are more stringent levels of Kedusha. There's more stringencies. There's more purity demands that are associated with these places. So what is said about Eretz Yisrael as a whole that expresses its holiness? That you're able to bring certain karbanos from them. So says Rav Soloveitchik, why would you choose these things? The Omer, the Shtei Alechem, the Bikurim, they seem rather random. And you say, Trumos and Maestros, Kedushas Eretz Yisrael in general, the mitzvahs Yishuv Haaretz. These aren't the things that come to mind when you say what expresses the holiness of the land of Israel. Yeah, the Omer, the Karban Omer, and the Shtei Alechem. What's the cash? Says Rav Soloveitchik, and this is mamash brilliant because it's clearly the pshat of the Mishnah. The Asara Malos, the 10 levels, are delivering the theme that there is an epicenter of holiness in the land of Israel, which is the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and emanating out from that, that Kedusha permeates the entire land. Meaning, there is a Kedushas HaMikdash, there is the Kedusha of the temple, and that holiness of the temple permeates the entire land of Israel. Meaning, that the examples of Kedusha that you're going to bring to describe Eretz Yisrael are things that have to do with the Mikdash. So these are the examples. Eretz Yisrael is the only place where you can bring these karbanos from. These karbanos can only come from Eretz Yisrael. Because the Aretz, as such, the Kedusha, and therefore the connection to the is characterized by the Mikdash. It's characterized by the Mikdash. And this goes back to the point that Moshe is saying. When you enter the land and you're going to create this context to keep the bris and to keep the chukim and the mishpatim that I'm talking about, make sure that you don't do what the goyim are doing, that you create this unified epicenter. Uvasa shama l'shichna sitrashu uvasa shama. You're going to go there. All of your eyes and your right, einenu v'libenu sham kol hayamim, as the Ramban says, that our eyes and our hearts are focused there. They're all focused there. The entire land is just concentric circles of the Mikdash. That's the land. That's the land, and that's what needs to be created. That's what needs to be created. And I want to just end off with one more note, because it's very it's easy perhaps to take this in a very broad national sense. But I want to just bring this home as it applies in the context of the individual. The Gemara in Brachos says, after the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, God only has in his world the 4 cubits of Torah study. That's all God has in the world after the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. So where are these Arba Amos Shel Halacha? Where are they? Where's the Arba Amos Shel Halacha? The answer is, obviously, that a person creates them. A person creates the Arba Amos Shel Halacha. What is important to understand, and you see this with the language of Chazal, right, as the Gemara in Sukkah, not this Gemara in Sukkah, another Gemara in Sukkah, says that the words, and also the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, that the speech of a Talmud Chacham needs to be studied, the mundane speech needs to be studied. The words that they use to describe things needs to be studied. The way that Chazal describe the character of an individual who is connected to Torah study is all relational, and I'll explain what I mean. What is the term that is used to describe a Torah scholar in the Lashon of Chazal? It's not a trick question. Someone who knows Torah. Talmud Chacham. So even that term, Talmud Chacham, is a little misleading. Really, the authentic term is Talmud Chachamim. That's the authentic term. And you see in the Girsos of Shas that are very old, and also for sure in the Rambam, the term is not Talmud Chacham, but Talmud Chachamim. What's the difference between Talmud Chacham and Talmud Chachamim? Just in the meaning of the word, what's the difference?
The amount of people that he's learning from.
Talmud Chacham, okay, maybe that's true. But the connotation of a Talmud Chacham means a Talmud. Like, he's a Talmud, right, and he's Chacham. He's a smart student.
It's an adjective versus, I mean, they're both, I guess.
They're both adjectives. The question is, what is it describing?
Yeah.
Is the Chachamim describing the person, or is the Chachamim describing who he's a Talmud of? Talmud Chachamim means he is a student of wise people. That's what it means. A student of wise people. It's not saying he is a smart person who knows a lot. He may very well be. but that's not the point. The point is that he's a Talmud Chachamim. He's making himself a student of wise people. When we leave the Beis HaMedrash Rabosai, and this is also in the Gemara, I already closed the Gemara in Brachos. The Gemara in Brachos, Daf Chavcha, says the Nosach. We don't need to read it from the Gemara. Right? It's written on the wall over there. When you leave the Beis HaMedrash and you thank God for the opportunity to study Torah, how do you phrase that? Tefillah, right? Moda ani lefanecha, Hashem lechem lechem v'zai, shesamta chelkenu mei yoshvei Beis HaMedrash. Mei yoshvei Beis HaMedrash. You don't say Moda ani lefanecha shenasata li lilmod Torah. You don't say that. You say shesamta chelki, my portion with those who sit in the Beis HaMedrash. Because there are people that sit in the Beis HaMedrash and the people that don't sit in the Beis HaMedrash, as the tefillah goes on to describe the differences between those people. Yeah, right, exactly. It's not saying that you've merited to learn a lot of Torah. That's also true. But that's not what it's focusing on. What it's focusing on is that you are here. You've put yourself in this space. That's where you've put yourself. You've put yourself in a space, meaning you've put yourself in a context. You've defined yourself in this context. That's what it means. The Dalet Amos Shel Halacha, it doesn't say that after the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, all God has are the people that are learning Torah. That's not what it says. It says the Dalet Amos Shel Halacha, the space of Torah study. It's the space. Yes, it's true. Individuals create that space. But again, it's not the individual that's learning Torah. It's the space of the Torah learners. It's the space of the Torah. And this is a very important insight in general. To what a person means by identity. This is the world is experiencing tremendous, tremendous confusion on this point right now because of the atomization of the modern world. That right, we don't understand what it means to have an identity because we think that identity means who are you, who am I? So what does that mean? You go super inward, you retreat into just your atomized self, the chaos of the individual. As I heard a great line from a from a Canadian thinker, right? That, right, the chaos of the individual means you. There's no. Not Peterson, a friend of his. No. Is a friend of named Pajot. He makes Christian idols for a living. But he's an interesting guy. The chaos of the individual means that the person looks at himself, trying to define himself just by himself. But that's totally wrong. Identity is not just a function of you. Identity is fundamentally relational. It's fundamentally created by connection. That's how it's created. This is a Peterson line. This is a great Peterson line. Listen to this. Sanity is something that we all have to outsource. Perush, what does that mean? It means that you don't sit alone in a room and become mentally stable. Why not? Why not? Because the development of the self necessitates constant feedback from everything and everyone. Constant. That's how you become you. You don't become you by sitting in an empty room. You don't. No one does that. And when the second that you think that's how it is, you've already lost. You're already, there's no hope for you. That once person buys into that frame of reference, they're already in serious trouble. Person needs to understand that identity, who are you is not a localized question. It's a broad question. And that's why Chazal, they describe people who are tied to this covenant, who are tied to this bris, Asher Tziva Le'elech Dor, they define this bris as where they are. Where are you? I'm in the Beis HaMedrash. I'm in the Dalet Amos Halacha. I'm sitting with these people. I'm with the Chachamim. I'm a Talmud of the Chachamim. Yes, you learned a lot of Torah. That's true. And there are halachic ramifications for a person who knows a lot of Torah or less amount of Torah. Right? A person who knows a lot of Torah, you have to give him kavod, right? That's a mitzvah in the Torah, right? A zaken, wise person, you have to give him kavod because he knows a lot of Torah. but that's not the primary definition. The primary definition is that this person lives in this place. He's in this place. And that is the ultimate difference. Someone who defines himself as Yoshua Beis HaMedrash, or someone who defines himself as Yoshua Kronos. There are plenty of Yoshua Kronos, plenty, who spend time in the Beis HaMedrash, even spend a lot of time in the Beis HaMedrash. But they haven't made the decision, they haven't made the conscious decision that they are Me Yoshua Beis HaMedrash. That's what defines them. And there are plenty of people who aren't Zocha so much to be in the Beis HaMedrash. They only, right, they steal the hours here and there to be able to sit in the Beis HaMedrash, but they know who they are with a certainty. They are Meyoshe Beis HaMedrash. They are in the Dalet Amos Shel Halacha, even when they're not learning Torah b'Fo'al. They're in the Dalet Amos Shel Halacha. And that is the question. And that is what's being communicated by Moshe Rabbeinu in these prakim on a national level that we've gone through here at length, and also at the individual level. At the individual level, that's the paradox, right? This idea of the contextual definition. It applies not just to the bigger, it's not just the the group. It's also the individual. The individual defines himself through the context. The context and the content. The context and the content. Third Canadian, right? McLuhan, very, very, very important guy worth looking into. McLuhan famously said, okay, the philosopher, communication research, the medium is the message. You've heard this before? The medium is the message. The medium is the message. What does that mean? It means that we've grown so accustomed to this, we don't even realize the ramifications of all this. But the idea that the medium through which the content is being spoken out to you, it defines the content. Meaning a radio show that your great grandparents were listening to is not the same story being given over on the radio show, being given over on a television. It's not the same story. Completely different experience. And the experience of watching something on a mega screen in a movie theater, that's a third experience yet. The medium is the message. And another way of saying that is the context defines the content. The content doesn't stand alone. It doesn't stand alone. The Torah that we learn does not stand alone. It depends on where we are, where we choose to be. And that decision, that definition, let's say, of where we are is a decision. It's a conscious decision. I am here. I'm in the Dalet Amos Shel Halacha. I am Miyoshe Beis HaMedrash. Bezrat Hashem, to take a lesson from what is being communicated to us. It shouldn't be ish kol yashar be'einav. Not everyone's doing whatever they want. No, everyone's doing whatever they want. They could be doing the best things in the world. Nothing's going to come out of it because it's everyone's all over the place. Everyone's sporadic. No one's connected. No one's united. There's no project. There's nothing being built, right? The second that we enter the aretz, on the national and individual level, we need to build what we need to build, and the shichno sitra shu avas hashama. Yishar koch.
What doctor?
On daf.